All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of CIR Live. Now, this episode, I have the distinct pleasure of being joined here by two guests from the Real Estate Insurance Exchange, or what we commonly know as in our industry as REEX. And today we're going to be talking about an issue that I know a lot of you have a lot of questions about, and that is the idea of stigmatized properties. So before we dive into the conversation, I just want to introduce our two guests here. So today with me, I have Dave Delaronde and Nathan D'Souza from REEX. Now, Dave is a senior VP of claims and litigation, while Nathan is the claims and litigation advisor at REEX. So gentlemen, I just want to start by thanking you for joining me on CIR Live. Thanks for taking the time out of your day. And ultimately, thanks for being here to chat with us today about stigmatized properties.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. So I guess let's just dive right in here. So I know that we're here to talk about stigmatized properties, but can I ask the two of you, or maybe can I ask Nathan, what are we talking about when we talk about the stigmatized property? What's kind of the definition we're looking at here?
Yeah, so a stigmatized property can be defined as property that has some sort of public perception that makes the property unfavorable and less attractive, and therefore the value of the property is diminished. The stigma is usually based on a number of factors that are not related to the property's physical condition, but instead based on people's beliefs and situations, usually with respect to their cultural or religious backgrounds. Stigmas with respect to real estate can range from violent deaths and suicides to previous screw-ups, or reports of the house even being haunted in some way, or even if the property is in close proximity to places such as cemeteries or graveyards. Of course, this is not a complete list of stigmas. However, it gives you a good idea of the type of examples that could make a property stigmatized.
Awesome. Thanks for the explanation, Nathan. And I think that kind of covers the gamut of what I consider, or what most industry members consider when they're talking about stigmatized properties. Let's talk a little bit maybe about the disclosure requirements around stigmatized properties. So let's just go back to the example you gave about a cemetery. I mean, I would say generally speaking, if somebody drives up to a property and they see that the cemetery is directly next door or directly across the street, I mean, they're going to physically see that the cemetery is there. But if we talk about the other stigmas that you mentioned, so the idea of maybe a suicide or a violent death, does an agent need to disclose if that type of thing has happened on a property that they are listing?
That's a great question, and we actually get that quite a bit. So while it is not required by law that industry members disclose whether a violent death or suicide, for instance, has been committed on a property, REEX does recommend that it does be disclosed to avoid any potential lawsuits. And it makes it easier for us to defend you in legal actions that arise from issues such as this. Whether a buyer considers the death on the property to be a stigma depends on the nature of the death. For example, if someone on the property has committed suicide in the garage, that is very different than a death involving a suicide of a young person on the property. These two scenarios may be perceived and received differently by different buyers. For example, a single parent may be much more affected and impacted by the suicide of a young person.
Yeah, and ultimately, yeah, I mean that makes total sense. And thanks for the clarification on that. And so just to sort of reiterate what you're saying, Nathan, if I understand correctly, there's no statutory requirement to disclose a stigmatized property. However, what REEX recommends is that industry members make that disclosure. Is that correct?
That is correct. I can assure you that if you don't make the disclosure, the neighbors most likely will, either on or shortly after possession date.
It's always the neighbors, right? It's
yeah.
and in any course that I've ever taught, in my capacity, either at CREB or here at CIR Realty, I mean, we bring that example up a lot that, you know, at some point in time, somebody is going to find out about this information. And so, you know, in your opinion, you know, if we're talking about disclosure, what's the best way to handle this disclosure?
Yeah, so it is very important to handle situations such as this with tact, sympathy, and diplomacy. Industry members should be very sensitive to the seller's needs, informative of the buyer's needs, and protect both themselves and the parties to the contract from liability arising out of the failure to disclose.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, we definitely want industry members, we definitely want our agents at CIR to remain professional about all these things, you know, also understanding, you know, be understanding and be sympathetic. So let's talk, I guess, about specifically, what should an industry member do if they're dealing with a stigmatized property when it pertains to the actual disclosure? What specific steps would you recommend?
Yeah, so the specific steps that I would recommend, if you're representing both the buyer and the seller, I would recommend that you as the industry member, make the disclosure before you even write the offer and add that note into your file indicating the time, the date, and the parties to which you made the disclosure. And then, of course, I would recommend by following that up with a confirming text or email to those parties. And don't forget to add that email or text in your file. Now, if you're representing only the seller, then I would recommend that that disclosure be made to the buyer's agent either before the offer is written, if you are aware, of course, in advance that an offer is coming, or before the offer is presented. And of course, again, I would recommend by following that up with a confirming text or email to those parties. And don't forget to add that text or email into your file. One of the main reasons we recommend putting the email, text, or any written proof in your file is if you are named in a lawsuit years later, it can be difficult to remember exactly what you said, to whom you said it, and on which date. And if you don't have anything in writing, it can be very difficult to prove your case.
That makes total sense. And I think that that's very, very helpful, prudent advice. So when it comes to a disclosure, industry members, if I understand correctly, should always make sure that they confirm the disclosure in writing in some way and then add proof of that to their file. Now, would you recommend that industry members use an addendum? So, you know, should they make the disclosure actually in the contract or a part of the contract itself? Or is it good enough to simply make the disclosure in the public or private remarks on the MLS listing or on the feature sheet?
Yeah, it's a great question. Most buyers don't even see the remarks section of the feature sheet, and these issues are typically quite sensitive for a seller. So due to this, I would recommend not putting it in the remarks section of the feature sheet. But I would recommend adding an addendum and have that be written up and included as part of the purchase contract. It should say something to the effect of the seller has disclosed and the buyer acknowledges that they have been informed of the stigma, whatever that may be, on this property. However, as mentioned before, industry members should handle these situations with tact, sympathy, and diplomacy. Depending on the nature of the stigma, for example, if it was a violent death or suicide, the seller may still have strong feelings towards the incident. In situations such as that, it may be better to have a conversation with the buyer's agent. Just follow that with an email confirming that you have disclosed that there was a violent death or suicide on the property and the buyer is now aware. However, if the seller has no issue with the addendum, then that is the way to go.
Okay. So to sort of sum things up, the gold standard, the best way to go about this is to have it form part of the contract by way of an addendum. So put the disclosure actually in the contract between the buyer and the seller. But again, we always have to remind ourselves as industry members that we're dealing with very personal matters in a lot of situations. We have to be sympathetic. We have to be understanding to how the seller might feel about this. So ultimately, if it's the best course of action to not put the disclosure into the contract, but simply inform the buyer's agent, follow that conversation up in writing so that you can document that conversation and add it to the file, that is an acceptable alternative. Now, speaking of the seller, I think one of the questions that a lot of agents have, because we talked about before, it's not a statutory requirement to disclose a stigmatized property. So what if a seller says, I don't want you to disclose this? Then how do we handle that situation?
That's another great question. We do see this from time to time as well, and our advice is the same. We recommend to industry members that if they are in a situation such as this, to inform their client that they should consider their instruction, as the buyer will most likely find out about the issue either on possession date or shortly after. And the buyer will probably feel deceived that the information was not disclosed upfront. They may also wonder what else was not disclosed about the property and may take legal action against the seller. By making the disclosure upfront, you are actually protecting your seller client from potential litigation. And trust me, litigation is stressful, costly, and can go on for years. For example, if a single parent of two young children were looking for a house and they made an offer on a property where a young person had committed suicide, and that disclosure was not made to this single parent buyer, when they find out on possession date or shortly after possession date, they may feel quite emotional and not want to live in the property anymore and may decide to sue the seller and possibly the agents as well. However, if the disclosure was made upfront, this can avoid any potential legal action the buyer could commence.
I think that's a great example, Nathan. And so if I understand correctly, I mean, ultimately by making the disclosure, the agent is not only protecting themselves, but they're protecting their client as well. I'm sure you guys in your role with REEX, you know better than anyone how stressful, costly, lengthy litigation can be. you know, nobody, myself included, obviously wants to be named in a lawsuit that could go on for years and years and years. So here's a twist for you, though. Let's say the agent tells their seller client exactly what you recommended, right? The advice is reconsider. You know, we recommend you make the disclosure. The seller comes back and says, look, I still don't want to disclose. How does the agent ultimately handle that?
So at that point, I would recommend that the agent should have a discussion with their broker on whether or not they should keep the listing. And I know what you're all thinking. Well, if I drop the listing, then the seller's just going to go to another agent, and that agent's going to get my commission. That may be true. However, it'll be that agent that's named in a lawsuit, that agent that'll have to attend court dates and go through the stress of litigation, and it'll be that agent standing in front of a judge having to explain why they did not make the disclosure. Not to mention, it'll be that agent that'll have to pay their REX deductible if REX opens a file on the issue. Remember, by disclosing, you are not only protecting yourself, but you're protecting your client as well from potential litigation.
I think that's, for most of us, good enough reason to disclose or have a very strong conversation with the seller about, you know, their potential disclosure here. Now, I just want to clarify a point that you made there. So REX may or may not open a file if an agent is named in a lawsuit due to not disclosing on a stigmatized property. Is that correct?
That is correct. REX files are open contingent on what is pled in a lawsuit. So to continue on from the example earlier with a single parent of two children, let's say they decided to sue and they claim damages related to emotional and mental distress, fraud, or punitive damages. Those are all exclusions that are not covered in the REX policy. So if an agent is named in a lawsuit where those assertions are made, they may not have coverage through REX, and they may have to pay for a lawyer to defend them in that claim.
Okay, so just to sort of reiterate to all of our listeners, I mean, REX provides errors and omissions insurance, but there are things that fall outside of the scope of REX coverage, some of which you've identified. So again, an agent may not have insurance depending on the claims that are raised or the damages that are charged, you know, as part of a lawsuit. I think, again, you're bringing up a lot of really good points here about all the good reasons to disclose these things. You know, the last thing that any of us want is to be named in a lawsuit when we don't have insurance coverage, right? So that's good to know, and thanks for the information and the example. So now, Dave, I want to kind of switch gears here, and now that we've kind of discussed the concept of, you know, violent death or potentially suicide or just death in general on a property as it pertains to stigmatized properties, I wanted to ask some questions about grow-offs, because I know that we get a lot of questions as a brokerage from agents about the disclosure requirements around grow-offs, particularly when they've, and I'm going to use air quotes here, and I'll allow you to go into this, but when they've been remediated, but there's a sort of a stigma that goes along potentially with a grow-off. So Dave, what can you tell us about disclosures around grow-ups, previous grow-ups, and how it kind of ties into the idea of stigmatized properties?
I think the easiest way to do this is to pull it all together under lawful versus unlawful instructions.
Okay.
That's the way we need to look at this. So I'm going to chat a little bit about the decision that we operate under and why we take the position that we do. When it comes to disclosures, and when I've gone through that, then I'll deal with the grow-op issue.
Sure.
I think it will help pull a lot of this into focus. One of the things that we're very, very sympathetic when it comes to your agents and industry members about is they're constantly faced with this perplexing situation of, do I disclose or don't I disclose? And under what circumstances? And the education that's given to them prior to getting their license is that you have to receive and pass on lawful instructions. Well, the problem with that is it's a paradigm, because what may be a lawful instruction coming from a seller is more than likely an unlawful instruction in a court of law. And that's where the problem exists. So we're going to explain what the law thinks about this, and then we'll give you folks a hand on how to deal with it, because that's the biggest difficulty, and that's where your biggest exposure is in any transaction. We follow something that's called the O'Farrell decision. It was a provincial court matter, and whether you folks realize it or not, the hierarchy of the court system is such that a court of King's Bench judge can overrule a provincial bench judge's ruling, and vice for the Supreme Court of Canada, or a court of appeal can override the Court of King's Bench or write up the Supreme Court of Canada. It is a provincial court decision, but the judge that wrote the decision now sits on the Court of Appeal.
Okay.
So it's not going to get overturned by a KB judge. That's just the way it is.
Okay.
And it's a pretty simple case. This was a case here in Calgary that goes back to 2009. And it was a realtor that took a listing on a house, and it was disclosed by the seller at the time of listing that there had been a flood in the property. And it had been quote unquote professionally remediated, and was disclosure required. And the realtor, being very new at the time, said, "I'm not sure." She called her broker, and the broker said, "If it's been professionally remediated, you don't have to disclose it unless you're asked." And that's sort of the prevailing education standpoint on this. So that wasn't disclosed. A woman, a single mom with three kids, came, looked at the property, put an offer on it, closed on it, and moved in. And shortly thereafter, the youngest child was in acute care at Alberta Children's Hospital. And this kid, it turns out, was deathly allergic to any kind of mold.
Hmm.
So quite clearly, they hadn't got all of the mold. And so the buyer sued the seller by some stroke of luck. Neither realtor was named. But anyway, it went to trial, and it was a reserved decision that came down. It's about a 30-page decision, and the judge had some very interesting things to say. Boiling it down in simple words and paraphrasing it, he said, look, when it comes to disclosure, you can't be picking or choosing what you want to say and playing this little shell game of, well, no, there's nothing I need to disclose, but if you ask me, I'll tell you.
Mm.
And he characterized that by saying, if you're going to do that, there's going to be a sustainable cause of action against you. So in other words, if you fail to disclose, that's grounds enough to initiate a lawsuit, and the court is going to sustain that. The seller has no skin in the game, but they know everything about the property. The buyer doesn't know anything about the property, and they've got all the skin in the game because it's their dough that's going to make it happen. So what he says in simple terms is, no matter what you know, you have to disclose it, period. If you don't, you will get sued, and the court will back that cause of action. The other thing that he commented on that I thought was fascinating was the expression professionally remediated. He says, you cannot use that term because that implies a standard. And what standard? To who? It's fine to say it's remediated, and the solution that you had put on top of that is to simply add all of the paperwork associated with whatever the mitigating issues were, but stay away from that. So when it comes to disclosure, it doesn't matter what it is you got to disclose, for the very reasons that Nathan raised, the sellers, the buyer or the neighbor is going to disclose it one way or the other. You're going to get sued because a buyer thinks they've been lied to. And by the way, what else didn't you tell us that we haven't found out about yet?
Right.
So, you know, I can tell you that after doing thousands of these, we've never seen a lawsuit because somebody disclosed too much. That's simply not an issue. So if we turn to the issue of grow ops based on this lawful, unlawful instruction, I'm assuming at this point you folks understand that what we're saying is you have to disclose it. And for the very reasons that are the same as what Nathan articulated, the other side of it is that grow-ups aren't necessarily a stigmatized property anymore. And the reason that I say that is there's a lot of people that are actively looking for previous grow-ups, and they're looking at them for two reasons. One, can I get it cheaper? Two, it's going to be a revenue property, so I could care less. So they just don't care. The other thing that we should point out to you is that the further back the issue that gave rise to the necessity to disclose whatever the nature of the stigma is goes, the less of the stigma it's probably going to be. You know, if it was a suicide 10 years ago, 15 years ago, or a grow up, chances are nobody's going to care. Again, it's going to be in the mind of whomever has to make that decision. But we also have to remember that if somebody's going to write an offer on a property, they're pretty excited about this property to begin with. So it's very likely that the disclosure of that stigma isn't going to have nearly as much of an impact on this potential buyer as one might think. I have yet to become aware of a deal that fell apart because a disclosure was made and the buyer decided to walk away. I have yet to see one. To me, it speaks to the credibility of the realtors. They're not trying to hide anything. And our experience tells us that both buyers and sellers find comfort in it, because what you're trying to do is protect them. That's the way they see it. We don't care about them. We care about you.
Right.
And by doing it that way, you're actually protecting yourself, which is what we're sitting in the background trying to do in terms of having conversations like this. So when it comes to the grow-up, yep, disclose it for exactly the same reasons. And the issue is it may result, and I say may, result in a minor price reduction now, but that's going to be decidedly cheaper than having to hire a lawyer and litigate it for the next 5 years. The math is pretty straightforward as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and I think to sort of sum up a lot of what you said, Dave, it's been my experience as an industry member, regardless of what the issue or perceived issue is, generally speaking, if people are upfront about the thing, regardless of what the thing is, buyers often feel empowered at that time and place to make an educated decision about whether they want to move forward with the purchase of the property. And of course, the fear of the seller is, well, I'm going to lose a potential buyer because of the information that I'm sharing. And it's possible that that's true. But I mean, you guys work in a world of lawsuits every single day, where generally when people feel ambushed by something because they got the information after the fact, instead of empowered by the information up front, they're pissed off, they're upset, they want to go for blood. That's why they sue. So again, I like a lot of what you've tied in there about the lawful versus the unlawful instruction. I think you made a lot of good points that, I mean, the prevailing wisdom in our industry is, well, if my client gives me a lawful instruction, I'm okay to take that, but the courts may interpret what is lawful versus unlawful very differently than we potentially do as an industry. So great points, Dave. I really appreciate it. Guys, kind of to wrap things up here, and maybe Nathan, I can kind of throw it back to you. You know, is there anything else that you would want industry members to know about stigmatized properties, or I guess sort of disclosure in general?
Yeah, like there's no doubt that it can be difficult to sell a stigmatized property, not only when dealing with the sellers, but also when attracting potential buyers. But it is your job as industry members to tackle that challenge with sensitivity and try to put the property in the best light possible. And just to reiterate what Dave spoke to just earlier, disclosures upfront are very important, and the stigmas on properties really depends on whether or not the buyers themselves consider a property to be stigmatized. A minimal price reduction is cheaper than a lawsuit, trust me. And remember, if anyone really loves the property, they may still want it despite any stigmas with respect to that property. BREEx takes the position of disclosing. So, and just like Dave said, we have never seen a claim come in where an industry member disclosed too much.
You know, when I first got into the industry, everybody told me that the three most important words in real estate were location, location, location. And I think what I've come to realize is that's not true. As Nathan just said, I now realize the three most words in real estate are often disclose. So guys, thanks for taking the time to chat with us today. You know, we really appreciate your time, your words. Remember, for anyone listening to this, if there's anything we missed covering, you can always check out the REEx website. It's www.reix.ca. Gentlemen, thank you on behalf of CIR Realty for your time. It's always a pleasure, and hopefully you guys have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.